It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5, touchdown, Giants, 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, or hashtag Giants Chat if you want to join the conversation on Twitter. The New York Football Giants beat the Detroit Lions in overtime, 23-20. And Lance, if you want to summarize this game to me very simply, it is this. The Giants win the turnover battle. The Giants win the football game.
Lions, we knew coming in, one of their biggest issues was not being able to protect the football, as you just mentioned, John, and they followed that exact script, and the Giants did a better job in terms of protecting the football outside of that Eli Manning interception, and they did have the Andre Brown fumble, but they were able to regroup from that and make the plays necessary down the stretch in overtime, whereas the Lions had golden opportunities to close out that game, and they just allowed the Giants to get right back into it.
And the star of the game, much like it's been for many games this year, Lance, was the Giants' defense. All the Lions' scores came either off big special teams plays or off Giants' turnovers. For the most part, the Giants' defense got that Lions' offense off the field, especially in the second half, and gave the Giants' offense numerous opportunities to put points on the board. And quite frankly, they couldn't do it most of the time. And the biggest play of the game, and the only reason, let's be honest, this game even got into overtime, was because of that Will Hill pick six. Was there any indication that this offense was going to be able to drive the field and score a touchdown in the second half? I don't think so. The defense needed to put points on the board, and they did it.
It was a tale of two halves for the offense, John. They were actually quite productive in the first half. Weren't necessarily lighting up the scoreboard, but you know what?
Yeah.
Eli Manning had time to throw the football, and they were able to make some plays through the air. Not necessarily on the ground, but we knew that coming in because the Lions were one of the top five teams in the league against the run. Second half, the reason why no one had confidence, and you needed the defense to come through, John, they don't pick up a first down until just under 3.5 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter. It was one three and out after another. It was a safety, lack of pass protection, no big plays down the field, not even in short yardage situations. The offense was a complete mess. They've got to be thanking their lucky stars that a guy like Will Hill comes through with a play like that.
Well, let's start with the offensive line because you mentioned protection. And in the first half, at least, the protection was pretty solid. That allowed Eli Manning to throw 12 of 20 for 137 yards and a touchdown. That's a 97 quarterback rating in that first half. Now, the Giants couldn't run the ball, and I think part of that was the Lions' defensive line being a little bit overwhelming for the Giants' front. Up there on the offensive line. But Eli Manning had a good first half. Gerald Jernigan in that first half have had 4 catches for 61 yards and a touchdown. Hakeem Nicks had 43 yards worth of receiving yards. And the offense really looked probably as good as it's looked. Man, I mean, what, the second half of the Chicago game maybe? Something like that?
You have to go pretty far back. Plus, they were 5 of 8 on third down in the first half, too. So they were very effective in terms of converting key situations.
Against the number one third down defense in football,
correct,
by the way.
So that was a sign that, okay, maybe this offense has turned the corner and they would be able to put together a consistent group of 4 quarters. But then they come out in the second half. And, John, you know, this has always been a problem throughout the course of this season. They get the ball to start the second half, and they have been able to do absolutely nothing this season.
Well, on the radio broadcast, we have our 4 drive of the game contest. And this is if the Giants score on their first drive of the second half, you win a gift certificate to Ben and Jack Steakhouse. Well, there's been 15 games this year. Do you know how many winners we've had? Take a guess.
They've had 1 touchdown.
2 scores.
And a field goal.
Yep. And both, right, if I'm not mistaken. I know one came off a John Beeson turnover. I think the other one either came off a big special teams play off a turnover as well.
Well, the touchdown came off of when the Chargers turned the ball over. Ryan Matthews, I believe, fumbled the ball to,
yep,
start the third, mm-hmm, quarter. Giants get it back. Very short field position.
Correct.
Here's the numbers. 10 punts, a fumble, an interception, field goal, touchdown set up by the Chargers, turnover, and then a turnover on downs, don't forget, too. So they've been able to mix it up.
That's as bad as it gets. And you mentioned water. This is when the offensive line started to fall apart a little bit. And look, give them credit. Up until that third quarter, they did a good job. And that's considering the fact Brandon Mosley went down with a broken hand. Dallas Reynolds had to come in, who's been a center for his entire career. Really has only practiced center since he's gotten here. Goes in, plays guard next to Kevin Booth. So you have him and James Brewer flanking Kevin Booth. Beattie out at left tackle, Pugh out at right tackle. And they simply had a lot of trouble in that third quarter, Lance. And they really couldn't do a whole lot. The Giants went 3-and-out in their first possession. Second possession, 3-and-out. Eli Manning, I believe, suffered a sack. There it is, minus 3 yards. Sacked by, I take that back. That was a, the sack on Manning's safety, excuse me. That was Nick Fairley, knocked him down in the end zone. And you keep going, it's just uglier and uglier and uglier. And the protection just fell apart in that second half. And the Giants really couldn't do a whole lot offensively again, and it looked like the team we've seen for the last half of this season.
Well, and I think part of that is what you just touched on, John, the fact that there's been a lot of movable parts on the offensive line, and once again, the Giants followed that exact script. You have Mosley goes down early with the broken right hand. You bring in Dallas Reynolds. He moves to guard. And what did we talk about throughout this season as to why maybe Kevin Booth has struggled at times? Not a great deal, and why Will Beattie has had his fair share of struggles, because think about the guys they're playing next to. Not so much their play as individuals, but Beattie has had to worry about different guards and the communication and the chemistry, and Booth has played either a guard spot or when he's moved to center, he's played next to different guards.
I'll buy that for Booth, because as the center, you set up protections, you have to worry about switching on stunts and all that type of stuff, and I think there's a lot more communication going on when you're the center. As for Will Beattie, I have a lot of trouble making a similar excuse for him because, Lance, quite frankly, so many times we've seen him this year, it's not like there's miscommunications on stunts. It's just a one-on-one, and we saw it yesterday, another play where he literally gets pushed into the backfield, right into Eli Manning's lap by an untested rookie. Now, I know he's a good athlete, but Ziggy Ansah is not this massive specimen that should be overpowering a guy that's been in this league for 6 or 7 years. And Will Beattie just got pushed back in Eli Manning's lap. You can't have that.
Not only did he get pushed back into Eli Manning's lap, he got pushed back to Dondre Brown as he got the carry, and that's why they nearly turned the ball over because Brown fumbled, fortunately jumped back on the football. So that just goes to show you why the Giants haven't been able to even run the football this season. Everybody talks about pass protection and how Eli Manning's been sacked more often than not. How about the fact that they can't even find holes or they can't even get penetration with the running game because by the time the running backs get the handoff, there is somebody already up the gut or there's somebody already off the edge. And that was extremely evident with respect to the Lions game the other day. So that is clearly an area that they're going to have to shore up. You know, we could talk to death all the needs that they're going to need to go out and address this offseason. Before you even talk about any other position, you need to start with the offensive line. There's no point of discussing getting Eli Manning right, getting a different running back, getting a new wide receiver to potentially place Akiem Nicks. Until you address the offensive line, there's no discussion, as far as I'm concerned, with
Nothing
respect to their offseason plans.
Nothing else can get better until you shore up that front five. There's no way you can do it. And by the way, throw in an addendum there. I want a running back that can pass protect consistently and be a good third down back. And I want a two-way tight end that can also stay in there and block if you want to go max protection. Because that's one of the issues the Giants have had this year, Lance. Even when they want to go max protection, they don't have a good blocking tight end, unless you're talking about Bear Pasco, to leave in. And besides Andre Brown and Peyton Hillis, you know, David Wilson couldn't pass protect either. Michael Cox, who can't be trusted to do that either. So they need to really address those types of fundamentals this year before the rest of the team can get better.
Those are extensions of the offensive line.
No question about it. A couple other positive notes I think we still touched on. Mathias Kiwanuka maybe had his best game as a member of the Giants this year. A couple of sacks, made a couple of plays in the backfield. He played a good game.
Well, the defense overall on this season, I think, has performed quite well.
Sure.
Kiwanuka did stand out yesterday in particular. He had led the team in sacks early this season until Justin Tuck really exploded. Beeson had another great game, double-digit in tackles. Will Hill, we talked about. Antrell Roll was very good in terms of coming up and stopping the run. And there were even some opportunities to me, John, that they left on the field.
Oh, a ton.
How about all the dropped interceptions?
Well, talking to Earl Thomas after the game, he was joking how they were doing push-ups on the sidelines the entire game. I thought the arms would start falling off. They were doing push-ups that felt like every possession. Tremaine McBride dropped two. Prince Amukamara dropped one. And we're not talking about tough interceptions.
Right
in their hands.
In the breadbasket. Bounced right off. And Prince did a very nice job on Calvin Johnson. However, Calvin was hurt, so
boy,
you can only put so much stock into
he
that.
He did not look like himself, did he?
Three catches, just over 40 yards.
I mean, I wish I had a play count on him, but it seemed like he sat out almost 40 to 50% of the offensive snaps for Detroit.
And that's a big reason, I think, why the Lions' offense struggled. Because think about it, Stafford then got in the position where normally he likes to just throw it up, and then he hopes Calvin makes plays, John. Who's doing that if Calvin's not on the field?
Well, you rarely saw that from Matt Stafford in this game. How many times did you see one-on-one balls just throw it up and hope my receiver makes a play? You didn't see a whole lot of that down the field.
Not at all. Fourier made a play or two, but then he was responsible for the deflection that led to the Will Hill interception. Durham, you know, wasn't really necessarily a big playmaker.
He had a couple drops.
So across the board, they weren't necessarily able to make enough plays.
I mean, Joik Bell, their biggest weapon through the air, 10 catches on 10 targets for 63 yards. They threw to the running backs an awful lot in this game. And Reggie Bush, a very quiet game, and yet another fumble, something that's really plagued them all year long.
And that's why that took him out of the game plan.
Yep.
They turned to Joik Bell, who also led the team in rushing.
He's a heck of, you know, he's a nice player. He's really a nice little player. He's not like a super athlete where he's going to run for an 80-90-yard run at any given time like an Adrian Peterson, but he's a nice between-the-tackles, workman-like type back. That's the type of back that I think the Giants need to get on this roster next year, someone to complement Andre Brown.
That's why I think the Lions' running game has been so effective, because he and Bush are good complements to one another. Because Bell's not the type of guy, and I know he had a number of carries. You can't rely on him 20 to 25 carries a game and then 10 or 11 receptions. That, to me, is really straining him.
Oh, no question about it. But if you give him 15 to 17, throw him a handful of times, you'll be in good shape. He can carry that type of load. He's that type of physical back. Back to the Giants' offense. Jarrell Jernigan, probably his best game as a member of the Giants. Six catches, granted it was on 12 targets, but a couple of very big ones, including a touchdown and a fourth down in overtime. A nice sliding catch where he went down to get the ball, and Jarrell Jernigan, I thought, showed a lot of progress. But here's the catch 22 now. He's really playing the same spot that Victor Cruz is so good at. So if Cruz is back next year, let's say Jarrell Jernigan, you decide, can be a productive wide receiver. Do you then leave Cruz outside in these third down situations and put Jernigan in the slot? Because I really don't think Jernigan is equipped to play outside much. He's a much more of a slot receiver than even Cruz is. So that's something the Giants will have to figure out. But it was good to see Eli have some chemistry with the third-year wide receiver. Let's be honest, until this game, really had done nothing on offense for this team.
Doesn't have a very big resume, so you're right. It's nice to see him also pick up where he left off in the last game, because you want to see some consistency out of a receiver.
And he didn't get hurt.
Correct. That's also a positive.
Which has always been a thing with him.
And we're going to get to Adrian Robinson in a second.
That was my next topic. Don't
I'm
worry.
Sorry to jump the gun here, but I do want to just get back to Jernigan, your question about what they do in terms of the alignment. You know, Cruz is not a big receiver, John, so I can't see them moving him to the outside and using him there consistently.
Well, I mean, he plays outside in two wide receiver sets, though.
He has success out there.
Again, I agree. I think it's a tough decision. But if Jernigan turns out to be a more reliable receiver than, say, a Nix or a Randall, and I'll get to them in just a second here, you have to figure out a way to utilize them. And by the way, speaking of utilizing receivers, everyone that likes to criticize Kevin Gilbride, nothing but three steps drops yesterday against the Detroit Lions. Short stuff, timing routes all over the field, and it worked.
Well, they adjusted rather quickly and rather well throughout the course of this game, but I think the fans are still going to say, well, where was this earlier in the season?
Well,
you know the fans' reaction in terms of, okay, it worked now, then why didn't we see it in Week 7 or Week 8?
Now, something to me, Lance, that was quite striking in this game. You saw a lot of single-high safety from the Lions in this game, a lot of straight-up man-on-man coverage outside on the Giants' wide receivers, and quite frankly, I didn't think Akeem Nix and Reuben Randall made those guys pay enough. They had okay games. Randall, four catches on seven targets, 52 yards, dropped a very big slant route in the end of the fourth quarter that could have been a Giants game-winning score. Eli ends up throwing the interception on that drive, and the Giants go into overtime. Then you had Reuben Randall, who had nine targets, just four receptions. Eli overthrew him, I would say, probably two or three, maybe even four times on deep routes down the sideline. And once again, Lance, you simply, for the most part, did not see the separation you need to see from Randall and Nix getting man-on-man coverage outside from the line, something you need to depend and be able to rely on your receivers to beat consistently if you want to be a good offense.
It's something we've been talking about all season. Victor Cruz has been double-teamed, and you're waiting for another wide receiver to take advantage of his one-on-one opportunities, and I think that's why the Lions approached it that way. They were missing, remember, their top two corners, Rasheen Mathis and Chris Houston, so the Lions were looking at what the Giants had to offer on paper and also in reality. And they said, okay, Victor Cruz is not in the game. Jarrell Jernigan's had one good game under his belt. We're going to man him up. Let's see if these guys can take advantage. And for the most part, that game plan worked for the Lions because outside of Jarrell Jernigan, no one really stepped up. However, Nix could have had a touchdown. Manning overthrew him, as you noted.
Another bad throw.
There was a play where Manning also could have hit Hakeem Nix for a key conversion, and there was a miscue where Nix clearly dropped it.
And as good as Eli's numbers were in the first half, 12 for 20, 147 yards, he was not sharp. He threw that high pass to Jernigan where he had to make the acrobatic catch on the sideline to get his foot in to stay in bounds. The next, on that same drive, he threw that fluttering pass to Jernigan over the middle that came up short. He overthrew Nix on that sideline route that could have been a touchdown. And he airmailed a pass, I believe it was to Brandon Myers on the left side of the field on that same drive. So Eli, once again, Lance, just not accurate. Even when he did have time in the pocket, his passes were not on the mark.
Well, and I think that gets back to the happy feet, sensing the footsteps.
Mechanics.
You know, just you're so overwhelmed by the pressure that you've seen this season, you're anticipating it coming each and every play.
Not an excuse, though.
Of course it's not, but that's maybe something that you need to work on in the offseason by building confidence in the O-line, and therefore that translates to Eli Manning.
Two other items. This one, a fun and a light one. How about the 3rd and 12 throwback screen that actually worked for first down to Andre Brown? It only took 15 weeks to get a screen pass, Meadow.
Well, I wouldn't say it was the prettiest play I've ever seen.
Oh, it was a nice play.
But it worked.
Oh, don't take anything away.
Come
it was
on.
A good play. What, do you have a problem with the throwback screen?
It was okay.
Rolled right, threw it back left, got a couple of blocks.
Well, when you execute, you can perform. Wow. But once again,
you're tough to please.
Well, because you know why? I can't get overly excited over one play. And it's the same thing about Jernigan. Jernigan's had two good games, and that's great for him. But with the Giants, their philosophy heading into the offseason, John, I don't think they could say to themselves, oh, well, Jernigan could definitely operate in this system because he's done well for two games.
I'm not saying that he's your answer all of a sudden, but I think you have to at least consider him to be in the mix now and give him a chance to compete at some point. And you can't take a you can't take a little bit of pleasure in one good screen pass? Come on, Meadow. Bah humbug.
They haven't been able to run the screen pass in how many years?
Why do you think I'm celebrating? It's a good screen.
All right, listen, if you want to put it up on the wall, we'll put it up on the wall.
And now, from what at first seemed unintentional comedy, and hopefully it's not that serious of an injury, we'll find out, in which case it's not funny at all. But Adrian Robinson, after a year on injured reserve on his first play in uniform this year, runs down on kickoff, hurts his knee, out for the game, likely out for the season. I'm sure they'll have more results on his MRIs this week with his knee. He was on crutches after the game. So you hope it's not that serious, but yet another setback for the young Giants tight end.
Well, Giants fans have been itching to see him on the field. They saw him on the field, and he immediately went back off the field.
He made it. Apparently, he blew somebody up on that kickoff coverage. I didn't actually see the replay where I saw the play, but somebody told me he blew somebody up on that.
Well, unfortunately, he took a big brunt of the hit as well.
Yeah.
Because that's why he wasn't able to come back in the game. I was going to say, is he the next Ramsey's Barden? But see, Ramsey's Barden at least had a big game before he got hurt. Adrian Robinson has yet to even perform and put up a respectable number in the box score.
201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. We have four people on the line. We will take your calls in the order in which they were received. And we'll start with Hugo in New Jersey first. Hugo, good morning. How are you, pal?
Hi, good morning, guys. Well, I got to say that it was one of the least satisfying victories that at least I can remember. And the reason for that is, you know, at this time of year, you look for improvement. And really, there was the problem areas were still the problem areas. The strengths were still the strengths. So we didn't really see any significant improvement.
Well, I mean, Hugo, at this point of year, the Giants are what they are. You aren't going to see the offense all of a sudden break out and be a 380-yard passing offense in, you know, week 15.
Yeah, but there are some young players out there like Ruben Randle. You want to see him win his one-on-one battles, for example. You want to see the player continuing to develop.
That's
why
fair.
I think Jernigan's performance, at least he's off the, I don't know, whatever we call it, red shirt or year or whatever. I guess he's had three red shirt years. But, you know, to the point you guys made earlier, you know, maybe one way to use him if he continues to develop is in four wide receiver sets, and you can have both Cruz and Jernigan be the inside guys, and maybe the Giants can jettison that same formation they used, but in the past they've used Beckham and Myers flanked out. I don't understand that. Why not just put pressure on the defense with the faster guy out there?
Hugo wants some old run-and-shoot four-wide receiver.
Well,
bring back Houston Oilers, baby. Let's go.
Well, No. I mean, we do go to four receiver set in third and longs, but it's been Beckham, it's been, you know, Myers flanked out. Just scrap that. We don't even have good tight ends, and not like those guys are going to lay out a block if you want to go to a running play. So just put Jernigan out there and have him work with his quickness in intermediate routes. Hey guys, a few things that really irritated me about the game. Shame on you, Will Beatty. I mean, I watched Brandon Mosley battle Sue for a quarter. Then I watched his backup battle Sue game. You could argue that Will Beatty was the worst offensive lineman out there. And with him playing so poorly and Eli playing so poorly, that's about $30 million of cap tied up in players who, you know, you could basically, you know, they're bottom tier in the league. It's really irritating to see Will Beatty play that way. And I don't know what the cause of that is. You know, getting ragdolled like that, like you guys talked about, it's just infuriating.
That's fair.
I'm sorry. The other thing is Mathias Kiwanuka kind of infuriated me. He looked like a different player out there. I've been watching him all year. His get-up off the ball has been slow. He's been lethargic. He hasn't used his hands well. All of a sudden, yesterday, he was a bundle of energy. He had spin moves. He was using his hands. He was getting upfield quickly. But where was that all year? Where was that all year? And then you guys alluded to the play calling in the first half. I thought was brilliant, really. Where was that all year? I mean, we had weaknesses in the offensive line all year and at running back. We should have gone to the three-step drop, but I guess I'm one of those unsatisfied fans who will always point to something.
All right, Hugo, thanks for the call, pal.
Okay.
Take it easy, man. Look, Hugo makes some valid points, and you can't argue with a lot of them. It's very frustrating. You know, a win is a win is a win, but you're still only 6-9.
Well, who their record is, I don't think that we're going to sit here and make any excuses. In terms of the 2 points that Hugo brought up, yes, from a financial perspective, it is disappointing that you have a lot of money locked up in Manning and Beatty, and you look at some of the needs that they're going to need to address this offseason, and you say, wow, you know, those guys are not going away. Nor should they be going away, because I think that if you fix the issues around them, they're bound to get better. However, with that being said,
Eli more than Beatty.
Correct. Beatty has been losing his individual battles, so unless he changes his mechanics or all of a sudden becomes a different player, he is bound to struggle at times next season as well.
Well, again, talking to Sean O'Hara, if you watch some of our plays that changed the game, we've broken down some of those Beatty sacks, and he's talked about some of the technique issues that he has in terms of anchoring down, getting his hands up early, not getting them up too late, lets defenders get into his chest. You lose all your leverage, not to get too technical here, and that's when you get driven back into the backfield. So he just needs to clean up his technique and get a lot better at what he's supposed to be doing as an offensive lineman.
Well, but Eli Manning needs to clean up his technique too.
No
so
question.
I think you can address those things during the course of the offseason and hope that there is improvement. But the bottom line is right now, it's not going to change overnight, and you have to deal with the reality that those guys are going to take up some room in the cap moving forward. Can you restructure contracts? Absolutely. If you approach them, are they willing to do that? You know, that remains on the individual. I think they've done that before with respect to some Giants players, especially heading into this offseason. It's something they could talk about. With respect to Mathias Kiwanuka, Hugo's other point, you know, the defense as a whole has played well. Listen, have there been individual defenders that could have done more? Absolutely. But it's hard to really look at this defense and say they're responsible for why this team has struggled.
Certainly not. But other than Justin Tuck, they have not gotten a consistent pass rush from anybody on that defensive line.
Well, but the pass rush has been much better over the last few games.
Because of Justin Tuck.
Well, but I think other players...
He's had six sacks.
But I think other players have drawn some attention, which has also opened things up. And the secondary's
sure.
been better, which is why Tuck's been able to get
some
sacks.
I agree. But it's hard not to argue that the Giants, from that right defensive end position, where you've seen Jason Pierre-Paul and Kiwanuka for most of the year, you haven't gotten the type of pass rush production you would have liked. That's fair.
And part of that also is because one of the guys that you expected to be the biggest playmaker has not even been on the field.
Of course.
So I think that Giants fans need to take that into consideration.
But I believe most fans would have thought that Kiwanuka would have given them a little bit of more production this year, going back to his natural position of defensive end. And I think that has been a bit of a disappointment.
Because based on the chatter that everybody was saying during the offseason, oh, they're moving Kiwanuka back to the line. Watch out. The Giants' defensive line is going to get back to the type of production that it had when Spags was running things.
And I know people keep saying move Will Beatty to guard. I see a couple people suggesting that on Twitter. The guy's 6'6". He's not a mauler. He's not moving anybody inside a guard. You think Will Beattie is getting driven back by defensive ends?
What about a defensive tackle?
You want to put Sue or Fairley in front of this guy? You think he's going to anchor against those guys at guard? You think that's going to work? Good luck.
I'll tell you one thing, though. It would not hurt to give him some experience during the offseason at that spot.
Hey, being versatile is always a good thing. No question about it.
One other thing before we get back to the calls, and I know you said that clearly everybody on the defensive line has not been necessarily performing at a high level, but I just want to throw out the numbers to show that the sacks have increased almost exponentially.
Sure they have.
25 sacks in the last 8 games. They had 6 in the first 7. That's a big disparity.
No, it's a big disparity. I think, frankly, a lot of it has to do with the quality of the quarterbacks that you're playing. The better quarterbacks have the tendency to get rid of the ball quicker. They see the blitzes coming. They read pressure, and they release the ball. And we talked about the dearth of quarterbacks in the middle of that schedule, and I think that has something to do with it. And the quality of the offensive lines. Remember, we went through it. The first 7 or so games, the Giants played a franchise left tackle in every one of those games. That was the Cowboys with Tyron Smith, who's going to be a Pro Bowler this year. That was before the Broncos left tackle got injured and was out for the year. Jordan Gross is an excellent left tackle for Carolina. Kansas City is a Pro Bowl Cowboy left tackle.
Brandon Albert.
Exactly. The Eagles have, I can't think of his name. It's killing me.
Jason Peters.
Jason Peters over there at left tackle. Thank you. And the Bears have Bushrod over there at left tackle, who's done a good job coming over from the Saints. So they've had that side has dealt with a lot of very good offensive linemen the first 6 games of the year.
With that being said, though, they went up against Russell Okung, and they did a nice job getting pressure on Russell Wilson. I know that, granted, the score doesn't show that, but they did get to Wilson at times.
Yeah, they did. That's true. He was running around a lot back then. That's fair. Though I think a lot of that pressure came from the other side of the line.
That's fair.
But nevertheless, the pass rush has been a lot better overall in the second half of the year. Let's go to, I'm not sure if it's Yvonne or Ivan in Staten Island. It's Ivan. Ivan, good morning.
It's Ivan. Good morning, guys.
What's up, bud?
Doing well, Ivan.
A couple of points. We know what's wrong. We can see what's wrong. And rather than keying on that, Jernigan, you got to give him playing time to see how he's going to do. The last 2 games, the kid's been great. The more he gets out on the field, the longer he's out there, we can really see if he's going to fit in well with the system. And the other thing is, I think our defense has been playing very well. Number one, Beeson is a beast, and Antrell Roll has been playing fantastic. I'm really hoping the front office gives Beeson a nice long contract coming into next season. The other thing is, with the problems that we have and with all the 3-and-outs, as far as our pass rush goes and the rest of the defense, if these guys don't have any time to rest, after a while, even the greatest defenses in the NFL are going to falter as the game gets further in and further on.
And that's a great point, because if you keep going 3-and-out, you're not winning the time of possession battle. So you basically need to give gifts to your defense by having long, sustainable drives, and the Giants' offense can't do that.
Well, and Ivan, I think it makes what the defense has done the second half of the year that much more impressive. They've had to go on the field time and time again because the offense hasn't done anything.
That's correct. That's correct, and I think they're doing an exceptional job. But I really do want to see them keep Beeson. I think he's fired something up in this defense, and if you watch, he's in on every play. And I don't know, the last few games, Antrell Roll has really just really, really stepped up. He's playing great, great D.
And you're right, those two guys have been huge playmakers in terms of helping this defense turn around. But Ivan, you mentioned that they should lock Beeson up long term. I think, though, you need to be cautious and you need to make sure that the numbers work out, because remember, you have multiple issues across the board. It's not just let's keep one big playmaker, give him a lot of money, and then lose out on everybody else.
And Beeson's also a guy, Ivan, that's had a ACL surgery and an Achilles surgery. So he has had some bad injury history. So I agree, you want him to stick around. He does have some weaknesses. His coverage this year has not been great. But I agree, keep him here long term. But like Lance said, this team has so many needs, you have to make sure you don't overspend in one spot.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Ivan, appreciate the call, bud. Thank you for holding.
Thank you.
Hey, have a good one, man. Happy holidays. 201-939-4513. Steve's in Connecticut. Steve-O, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Misery loves company. You know, we knocked the
misery
Lions off the playoffs.
They won yesterday. Why are you miserable? Come on, man.
I am happy, though, you know, but, it, you know, just the term or whatever. I'm just glad to see the Lions, you know, out the playoffs. But what are we going to do about the safety position? Because, I mean, it's a good problem, I believe, because we got Will Hill, we got Roll. I'm assuming we'll get Stevie Brown back. Those are 3 quality playmakers. But then what about Mundy? What do we do about him? And Cooper Taylor, like, what are we going to do with him? Like, You know, I know we got him, what?
Well, he's on a rookie contract right now, so you don't have to necessarily lose him.
Well, I think the point Lance is making, Steve, that I think right now Ryan Mundy's probably the odd man out. You hate to lose him because he's such a good special teams player, but you said it. Roland Will Hill, to me, is probably a top five, top eight safety tandem in the NFL. Those guys are legitimately good. Both can play the run. Both can play the pass. They're both excellent tacklers in the secondary, which is one of the reasons the Giants have not allowed a lot of big plays this year, especially through the air and run after catch. It's a good problem to have. That's the last thing I'd be worried about if I'm a Giants fan. You got two young safeties. You'll probably extend role to reduce the salary cap hit in the offseason if you can. I think that's the one. Frankly, that might be the strongest position on this entire Giants roster.
Now imagine if you throw Stevie Brown into the mix, though.
Well, and then you can go back to some of that three safety stuff, sure.
Another thing, I mean, everybody's been talking about it, but Will Beattie's been getting manhandled all season long. I mean, I think he definitely should be opposed to restructure his contract. He should have no issue in doing that. I liked Michael Cox returning kickoffs. Like, what do you think about that in the foreseeable future?
He was fortunate on that return where he got 50 yards because he was about 8 yards deep into the end zone. So thanks to some good blocking and some shifty footwork, he returned that. But under normal circumstances, I don't know if they want him taking it out that deep.
That reminded me of watching J.R. Smith play where you're like, no, 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 yes!
Oh, boy, that quickly turned.
Yes, exactly.
All right, one more thing, just as far as the running back situation goes. As a matter of fact, the fullback situation, too, are we going to bring back Hymanski and you know, we're going to have him and O'Connor, or is it going to be one or the other?
My guess is they'll compete in the offseason. I think they'll bring both guys back next year and let the best man win.
All right. And what about the running back situation? What do you think we're going to do about that? I mean,
they need to add somebody. They cannot go to war next year with Wilson and Brown as your only two guys. You need to have a veteran running back in here. I honestly don't think they've seen quite enough from Peyton Hillis for him to be that guy. I think you need to bring in a more accomplished veteran or draft somebody else. You need somebody in here at running back that's not injury prone, which both Wilson and Brown are, and have done it in this league and you can rely upon to pass protect and run the football.
All right, and give me a grade on Tremaine McBride as far as what he did this season. What do you think?
Thanks for the call, by the way, Steve. Appreciate it, man.
I think he exceeded expectations. I don't think they expected to get that level of production out of
him. Based on what you thought he was going to do, I think you got to give him an A-minus, don't you? I mean, he's left some plays out on the field, so I'm not going to give him an A. Overall, just based on other corners in the league, he's probably been a B or a B-plus, right? I mean, you haven't seen him get beat a whole lot. He's been pretty good.
Plus, he's not the tallest guy in the league, and he's matched up against a lot of bigger receivers. So I think he's held his own for the most part. And look at all the injuries that the Giants have had to deal with in the secondary. I mean, they planned on Corey Webster having a bounce-back season.
And McBride's been the guy that's really always been there. He's been in the injury report a couple times. I think he missed one game, right, in the second half of the year. I think he ended up being out for that one game with the groin injury. But otherwise, he's been Mr. Reliable. He's been great.
They've been very fortunate to have a player like Tremaine McBride, considering the lack of experience. I mean, he's been tossed around the league, but you know, nobody knew of him. They even consider him still a rookie, if you ask around the league.
Well, it's funny. He was joking in the locker room a few weeks ago, talking to the media, that most of the guys when I got here thought I was a rookie. He's
exactly.
A six-year pro.
Been in the league, but the problem is hasn't had reps and hasn't had opportunities, so he's a sign of a guy taking full advantage of his opportunities.
Perseverance personified.
Real quickly before you go back to the lines, Steve was asking about the safety spot, and I agree with you, John. It's the one place they don't have to address, but if you're worried, Giants fans, about Ryan Mundy, it's going to come down to probably Mundy or Stevie Brown. That will determine who's going to get the last spot. Do they have confidence in Brown's health? Or do they want to bring Mundy back? And remember, if I'm Ryan Mundy, I think I've performed enough. Somebody's going to offer me a starting job. That's just the way I look at it.
Or
at least he's going to get consideration for it.
Yeah, does he want to come here and compete with Stevie Brown, let's say, for that third safety spot? Or would you rather go somewhere else when you have a better chance of getting a starter role? Now, he's more of your classic strong safety, not the best cover guy, mostly a box player, good tackler, big hitter. We'll see. I mean, I think he'll weigh his offers. I think he likes it here. He's a good locker room guy. He's a good teammate. I think he might come back here and compete with Brown for that spot next year. I think that's what it would be, a competition. Neither guy will be locked up monetarily-wise where you have to keep one or the other, in my opinion. Even though Stevie Brown is an unrestricted free agent this year coming off an ACL, you doubt he's going to get a big contract from anybody. So, yes, I think it all depends on what other offers he gets. If he gets a starting offer somewhere else, if I'm Ryan Mundy, and if it's starter Bunny, I'd leave. Got to do what's good for you. He hasn't had a big NFL contract yet, so.
And that's why, based on the injuries that we've seen across the league, teams are going to need some safeties. So I think that he'll get some consideration. It just depends. Would he be content going to another team? Or, like you said, would he be content handling a backup role and a special teams role here?
Let's go to D in Atlanta. D, good morning.
Hey, good morning, y'all. I'm going to be brief. I don't really have much to say. Even with the win, to me, is like, where was that all year? But I just want to say, man, I think we just keep everybody, man. I think after having a year like this, I think they'll come in more focused next year. You know, everybody will work on their craft a little bit harder.
You mean players or coaches, D, when you say keep everybody?
Everybody. No, honestly, everybody, except maybe, I don't think Akeem really wants to be here, to be honest. His the way he's just out there, I think he's just going through the motions till the end of the season. But maybe he's the only question mark I have. But other than that, draft a linebacker, maybe bring in another receiver, or Ben Tate. You know, Ben Tate's out there, free agent, I think. And like y'all said, the safeties are Stephen Hill and Roll are doing their thing. So I think you can, with Coughlin, you can keep this same group intact, maybe except for one or two people, and they just work harder on the craft on the offseason and come in ready to go. They know what they got to work on and what didn't work. And Gilbride, man. You showed that you can open up the playbook a little bit, rolling Eli out. I was like, yeah, where's that been at? Get him out of there. If they can't block him that long, roll him out to the right. Eli can move a little bit.
Yeah, he can, but you know what? On the move, we saw a couple pretty inaccurate passes when Eli was rolling out. He had trouble getting his feet underneath him and throwing the passes accurately.
Well, maybe that's something he can work on, you know, add that to his game. You
that's
know?
Fair.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. I mean, honestly, I'm not really mad at these guys. Hey, it's a bad season, but keep them intact. Come back next year and see what they can do. Then if it goes south, then you know you got to blow things up.
All right, D.
Good Christmas. Merry Christmas.
You too, man. Merry Christmas.
Right,
thanks for the
so
call.
Much.
I think for the coaches, for the most part, the staff will come back intact. You know, there might be a couple changes here or there. We'll see. We'll know probably at some point next week what the case is with that. But they finished 7-9, with 7 of their last 10. You know, granted, against not great competition, still you wonder what they're going to do there. That being said, personnel-wise, Lance, we're going to have a good, I mean, based on the 53 now and the starting 53 next year, I mean, I think you're probably going to have anywhere between 15 and 20 new players, right?
There's nearly 30 free agents.
I mean, some of those guys will come back, but you figure you're probably going to have 20 new players on this active roster next year.
That is into consideration draft picks.
That's a great point. That is a 40% turnover rate. That's pretty big.
And I understand where D's coming from. Maybe you refocus during the offseason some of these individual players, and maybe that can relate more to guys like Beattie and Manning, who you know you're not getting rid of. But I think you need to make changes on this roster.
You do.
You know, you can't say, okay, everybody's just going to come back and they're going to be refocused and momentum's going to carry your way because you're going to have a solid offseason. There is some personnel on this team, and we've talked about it, that, you know, may not belong on a 53-man roster.
Well, exactly. You pinpoint your weaknesses and you address them, and you do it with laser focus. And the Giants know how to do this. They did it last year. They put a big circle around their rush defense. They said, look, this has to get better. So you invest in Colin Jenkins, you bring in John Beeson, and all of a sudden your rush defense turns around. Mike Patterson as well has had a hand in that. You do the same thing next year at the offensive line. We need to get more rugged. We need to get stronger. We want some maulers at guard. Let's bring some people in and get better there. And I think that's exactly what the Giants are going to do. They'll find a tight end that can play both ways, both as a blocker and as a receiver. They'll hopefully bring in another running back. Maybe they'll bring in another wide receiver. But look, there's going to be roster turnover, and when you finish a season, whether it's 6-10 or 7-9, you'll underachieve. There has to be roster changes.
You can't think that you bring back the same group and all of a sudden the results are just going to get better alone. You have to, like you said, look for guys that fit your system and can address your biggest holes. And I think bringing in guys that were able to stop the run this offseason is the greatest example. So then you look at, okay, what was our major weakness this year? Clearly, offensive line. So then you look for guys that are going to come in and will help pass protect and help give Eli Manning some more opportunities to throw down the field.
And you touch on this briefly. We didn't really get into it, and we'll get back to your calls in just a second. Mo, you're up next. NFL Jints on Twitter makes a good point. The special teams reared their ugly head again in this game. I know Cox had that good punt return, that's good kick return in overtime, that's great. But the Giants allowed a 50-yard punt return to Ross that turned into a score. And again, you know, people love DeMontre Moore. Another boneheaded penalty that gave the Lions a first down and turned into more points for Detroit. All of those Detroit scores came off of either special teams mistakes, special teams plays, or offensive turnovers.
That was a big reason why they were able to get back in the game in the second half,
no
John,
question.
Because of the short field position. And, you know, DeMontre Moore gives them a gift.
Hand it to him.
They were going to punt. They failed to pick up that first down where they just needed 1 yard. They give five back to the Lions. Offensive drive continues. So, you know, everybody's calling for DeMontre Moore to get out there on defense and be a playmaker. You have to keep into take into consideration the fact that the Giants coaching staff has looked at what he's done on special teams, and he's cost them a lot.
And by the way, I was mistaken. They did not score on that drive that Moore had the interception. The offsides, excuse me, that was a drive where Justin Tuck picked off Matthew Stafford at the end of the second quarter. Nevertheless, still, those are the types of mistakes that can cost you football games.
But you don't know if the defense is going to help bail you out under those circumstances.
And great play by Justin Tuck, by the way. And that was it's funny. I was chatting. I forget who it was on Twitter during the game. We should start a new hashtag. Hashtag Len called it. Because remember he said the defensive line need to get their hands on more passes? With Matt Stafford going sidearm, Justin Tuck getting the job done.
Well, then, if I'm correct, Len also was referring to the fact that they weren't deflecting passes this season. I think that was one of his major points.
I think he'll live with Tuck catching the ball.
I think he will.
Yes.
But that's another great example and trend that you would like to see moving forward where, yeah. Listen, you can't get to the quarterback. What can work so effectively? Stick your hands up. Bat the ball down.
You're very chippy this morning.
I'm not chippy at all.
I find you to be very chippy.
I'm actually totally fine.
I don't know. There's something about you this morning. I don't like
you were chippy yesterday, but we can get to that a little bit later on. You and Pat, a nice back and forth there.
Hey, it was a fair question, and we did get a lot of questions about that on Twitter and
we
on
did.
The show.
Well,
he just didn't like the question.
Pat's Pat.
That's okay. Hey, look.
Were you able to patch it up after?
Pat and I are fine. Any segment,
I just wanna make sure.
Any segment on the radio where you can get Pat Hanlon upset is a good Pat Hanlon segment. That's why you have him on. You like the passion.
You won't see me complaining about that.
No, I know.
I mean, I had a front row seat to that.
Back to the phones. Maurice in Montclair, New Jersey. Mo Manning, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, listen, when you guys refer to the draft, throughout the years when we had Jerry Reese, he's always been this guy that said, we're going to take the best player available. Do you think that is going to be the philosophy going into this year?
Well, I think it's always pick best player available, but that's not the only criteria. I mean, if you have three players that are on the same tier, you're going to pick the guy that's going to help your team more based on his position. Now, they might have a guy with a .01 higher grade than somebody else, but if the other guy plays a position of need, they'll pick the guy that's at the position of need. What they're not going to do is drop two or three tiers to find the guy in a position that they need if he's not – it doesn't have the talent comparable to the other people available. That they won't do. But they will pick based on need if guys have relatively equal talent, Mo.
Okay, and I just would be like, you know, like sort of like that 2007 draft class where you had, you know, some rookies like Kevin Boss and Aaron Ross. And I think that we need a running back bad, and I think you can find a value late in the rounds because Bradshaw was a late-round draft pick, so... You know, we can get that production from some, you know, some rookies like we had in 07. That'll be great moving forward. And just talk about...
Yeah, you know what, Mo? I get that, but I want somebody that you can rely on. You don't know what you're getting out of a fifth-round rookie. With Andre Brown and David Wilson's injuries, do you really want an untested rookie being the only guy playing behind them?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But, all right, with Prince's... with his gameplay yesterday, was that a testament to his abilities to lock Calvin down, or was it that Calvin was just nursing tonight?
I think it was a combination of two. I think you need to take into consideration that Calvin really wasn't out there a great deal in the second half. So, you know, the numbers probably would have been higher had Calvin actually gotten more reps.
You think, what, 50% of the plays he was in for, 60% maybe?
probably around that ballpark. And then I think the times, though, that Prince went head-to-head with Calvin, he did challenge him. I mean, he had an interception that he dropped that was intended for Calvin, and that's partially because of Matthew Stafford's inaccuracy. So it was the combination of quarterback play and Calvin not being 100%. But, you know, Prince, for the most part this season, has made huge strides. And I think part of that is because he's been finally healthy for an offseason. He still needs to improve. But there's positives there, and Prince at least has solidified one corner. They still need to determine what they want to do on the opposite side of Prince. Because remember, McBride's a free agent. They don't know what they're necessarily going to do there. Corey Webster is going to be a free agent. So they have to bring somebody in to complement Prince. It's not just having one good corner in this league. You need multiple guys that you could turn to.
Okay, and my last point. A few weeks ago, I heard you guys rank, like, you know, top five players on the offensive defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
To see, you know, Will Hill play such a great game, special teams-wise, and, you know, out there on defense making a lot of tackles. I think he led the team in tackles yesterday, I'm not sure. And his big interception that, you know, was huge. Who do you think, you know, we have one more game to play, but who do you think is the overall, you know, MVP?
Sounds like
have a happy holiday.
Thank you, Mo. MVP of the defense and offense. I'd probably give my offensive MVP to... Heck, I'll give it... He only played half a year. Can I give it to Andre Brown? Played half a season.
He was productive for the time that he was in.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, I'm giving it to Victor Cruz. I think you have to give it to Victor.
Consider Adrian Robinson.
Oh, come on. See? Oh, you're fine this morning. You're not chippy at all. Please, don't give me that.
Well,
that was a necessary shot.
There's always this one player on the roster that has potential.
He's your Ramses Barden.
That's what I'm saying. I needed a replacement for Ramses Barden. I finally found
it. Well, but Ramses Barden was my guy. He was never your guy. Now
well,
you
I'm
have your guy.
Well, I'm adopting Adrian
Robinson. Yeah, you are.
He's my guy.
I appreciate
guy.
That.
The JPP of tight end. I'm still waiting for it. Andre Brown, I think, though, is a fair.
I think Cruiser Brown. Defensively, I think the legit candidates for defensive MVP are Roll. I think he's been better than Will Hill. Will Hill's been good, but I think Roll's been better.
So Will Hill missed a number of games, too.
Exactly. He was suspended. So I think you go Roll, Tuck, and Cullen Jenkins and Beeson are your four candidates. I mean, Beeson really helped turn the whole thing around. It's hard not to give it to him. But the run defense was good all year round. You know what? I'm going to give it to Cullen Jenkins just because I don't think enough people give him credit. He's played in every game. He passes, rushes the passer. He stops throwing. He does everything well. I'll go Cullen Jenkins.
That's fair. I think Cullen Jenkins is a guy that falls under the radar. However, you have to also take into consideration what Roll gives you in the locker room,
I love Roll. I mean, I have nothing bad to say about him. Where would you go?
Basically between Jenkins or Roll. I would
Not
lean
Tuck
towards
or
Roll.
Beeson?
You know, Tuck came along late in the season, and part of it was also because of the coverage sacks and the secondary giving him opportunities. Listen, it was great what he gave this team. Don't get me wrong. And Beeson, you know, wasn't here for the full year. I think if you're going to give an MVP award, I want to see them be here for at least 15 or 16 games.
Well, and that's why I didn't want to give it to Andre Brown.
So that's why I would definitely lean towards Jenkins or Roll. I'd lean more towards Roll only because of what he gave you in the locker room. Considering this was a very difficult season where they faced adversity, had issues, seemed like there were some divisions, and they were able to keep things together thanks in part to Roll.
More than fair. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter.
One other thing that Mo brought up, he was talking about trying to get a running back in the draft. I'm looking at the biggest game changers that came out of this draft, Eddie Lacy and Le'Veon Bell, for the Packers and the Steelers, respectively, second-round picks. So you can get a big playmaker in the early rounds. You don't necessarily have to wait till 5 through 7 because, as you mentioned, John, 5 through 7 is still a very big question mark. But you need to make the right decision in round two where, listen, you could go for a running back, but let's use David Wilson as an example, okay? Wilson was this flashy kid out of college. He never pass protected. So if you're going to draft another running back, let's say in the draft this season, you better make sure that he knows how to pass protect or he's been asked to do that in his system. I don't think that's asking for too much.
We had a good conversation on Twitter with Saraceno, and now another guy that's very chippy this morning. Mike Farmer on Twitter has a little bit of...
He's always chippy.
He's very fiery this morning, and I made the point to Saraceno. A lot of people want to, you know, cut bait on Will Beatty. And the comparison I made with Will Beatty is... if you watch the Cowboys over the past couple of years, one guy they gave a big contract year, a big contract to, 2 years ago was Doug Free. First year off that contract year, he was terrible. One of the worst right tackles in the league. Pro Football Focus had him graded as one of the worst right tackles in the league. Very similar to what you saw happen to Will Beattie this year. But now, Doug Free came back this year. He's had a much better season. He hasn't given up, I don't think, more than two or three sacks from his right tackle spot. He's blocked well in the running game because his technique got better. So I don't think Will Beattie is helpless here. Remember, just last year, he only gave up three sacks the entire season. He was a hell of a player. So I think you give him another year to try to get his technique straight and see if he can figure things out. Now, is he a Tyron Smith? Is he a Tony Boselli in his prime or something like that? No, he's not that. But he's certainly, based on his career from 2010 to 2012, one of the better left tackles pass protection-wise in this league. And I think you have to give him a chance to fix his technique issues before you jump ship on him. I mean, you just didn't invest a lot of money in him. You can't just turn back the clock and take the contract away.
If I'm correct, though, did Doug Free renegotiate his deal? For some reason, I feel like they tweaked the numbers there.
He did. That is correct. But 1 year off of a – and it was a much smaller deal than what Beattie got, if I recall. But I don't think the Giants or Will Beattie will be quite as willing to renegotiate after 1 year of a five-year contract.
And the other thing for Giants fans that are saying, let's cut ties with Will Beattie, and I'm not a guru when it comes to the salary cap, but
– dead money, cap hit, all that
stuff. It's
going
to take a huge hit. It's not like you can just cut ties with this guy and say, okay, it's off the books. Now we just bring in another guy to take his place, and we still have the money to use. No, you still absorb that on your salary cap. So it's not very simple as saying, okay, this guy's not productive, we get rid of him. This is the bottom line, Giants fans. If you're going to give credit to Eli Manning for what he did in the past, John, as you just touched on, then you need to give credit to Will Beattie for his resume. And you need to assume, hey, things in this offseason will improve. And if it holds true for Manning, then it can hold true for Will Beattie.
And I know Giant fans aren't his biggest fan. They never have been. He's not your typical, Richie Cyber type of offensive lineman where, you're going to go grind it out and run people over and pancake folks and, be this tough blue-collar guy. That's not what Will Beattie is. But he's still a very good, just by the numbers and by his work on tape in 2011, 2012, was an excellent, excellent left tackle. And you have to give him a chance to figure it out because you invested in him. Whether you liked that investment or not at the time, a lot of Giant fans didn't. And look, right now you're being vindicated. It looks like it wasn't a great decision to give him that big contract based on the year he's had this year, but there's still plenty of time to turn that around and for him to play like he did before he got that deal.
Well, and the reason why they invested in him, John, at the time last offseason, number one, there weren't a lot of left tackles on the open market, and it's hard to find a guy that's reliable. And based on what the Giants saw, he was reliable. Just hasn't been the case this season.
Back to our phones. Roldy's in Bayshore, Long Island. Roldy, what's up?
Morning, John. Good morning, Lance.
How are you, buddy?
How are you doing, Roldy?
Good, good, good. Yeah, I'm very happy, happy about, the win yesterday. It wasn't a pretty win, but it was a good win. And it just also shows, for the most part, when Eli has protection, he'll make plays, throughout the game. And I'm sure it wasn't, he wasn't making that many good of a plays, but the guys executed when we needed it. The third and sevens, the fourth down and sevens, they actually, executed it. And I seen the heart that I was looking for last, a couple of weeks. These guys overall played with heart, and I'm very happy about that. Happy about Jernigan, playing well. It seems like he's starting to, find himself now, find his way. I'm not going to go crazy, just like Lance said, off of one game. But I'm happy, that he had his moment. Again, I know you guys were talking about, who would be the defensive MVP. Ants down, I agree with you guys. Ants roll, I know a few callers were saying for the last couple of games, this guy's been doing it from week one all the way to now. Ants roll is, definitely the MVP. And Will Hill had a great game, with that interception, tackling all over the place. I'm very, overall, this was the heart, that I was looking for, and overall as a team, and I'm happy to see that. Hopefully, they could bring the same, intensity, have a prettier game to close the season out and execute the way that, we know that they can execute, the offense. And one question for you guys before I get off. Now, it looks like the Giants might have the 11th pick or the 12th pick. what position do you guys, you know, think the Giants should go at?
Oh, boy.
Go after. And that's pretty much what I have. Have a great holiday.
Thank you, Roldy. You too. I mean, bye. It's hard to say who's going to be available. I mean, I think you look at the offensive line, but do you pick an interior offensive lineman that early? We saw it last year, a lot of offensive linemen going in that first round. I mean, I guess you think about it if you see a stud there that you think can really help. I mean, if a lockdown cover corner is available at that 11th pick, I think you consider going cornerback. If there's a really good edge pass rusher, I think you consider that. I mean, that might be a little early for a tight end. If, you know, I guess if you have a franchise-type tight end there, that could be a Jimmy Graham type, you consider it. But I feel like you can get a good tight end a little bit later and be okay. I wouldn't consider running back in that spot. I wouldn't consider wide receiver in that spot. Maybe a linebacker. If you see a linebacker that can be a difference maker, you would consider it. I think that's where
that
you look.
That hasn't been their track
record,
though.
But it depends where the talent is.
Well, it also depends on what they do in free agency.
That's
keep in mind.
Even better.
You know,
point.
This conversation is going to be completely different after we see what the Giants do in free agency. You know, they get two interior offensive linemen. They don't necessarily need to draft an offensive lineman. So it's really premature to say what the Giants need to do in that first round until they round out the roster. Remember, free agency comes first.
Yep.
Then all of a sudden they patch up the holes with the draft.
It's a great point, Lance.
And I'm chippy this morning. See, come on.
Someone else is a little chippy too.
Another one. What are we
supposed
to look at?
I was pointing a farmer.
Oh, you were pointing. Well, you know. I told you, Mike's always like that, though. That's nothing new. He's got a track record of being chippy.
And
especially with the way the
season's
played out.
And he makes a good point. I can't disagree with it. Beatty was a hell of a pass blocker for 1 year. I think it was more like two. But fine. Fair enough. Could never run block ever. Franchise left tackles can't be one-dimensional. And if you had a beef with that long-term contract, his inability to be a mauler in the run game, I think, was your big legitimate beef and one I have trouble combating. I think that's a fair point.
Can't necessarily argue that.
201-939-4513.
Questions are popping up on Twitter, and this actually relates to the draft. That's why I just wanted to throw this out. At Andrew, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce the last name because
Chow?
I'm probably going to butcher it.
Chow?
C-H-A-U-X.
Could be a little French action?
Could be. Could be a little mix there.
You have a little French blood in you, don't you, Beto?
Oh, absolutely. I've got a little of everything. I'm a mix. Why did we need this win? Don't we need better picks rather than wins this point? No, and the reason why I'm bringing that question up, number one, it doesn't matter where you draft. It's all about what you take where you are drafting.
There will be a good, no matter where you draft, there will always be a starting caliber player available, except maybe when you get to the seventh round. But if you make the right pick, that's what, you know, in these quote-unquote weak drafts, teams still get great players if they pick the right guy.
It's all about the decisions you make. So to say, oh, well, if the Giants win a game or two here down the stretch, they're going to screw themselves out of a good draft pick. We're talking about a few spots here or there, number one. And if you do the right thing within your scouting department, you are going to find talent. We talked about the Seattle Seahawks. And Seattle's probably the best example to use across the NFL platform. 8 of their 11 defensive starters drafted between the third round and sixth round, and a handful are undrafted. So they didn't necessarily have a high draft pick every year, but they took good value at their picks. In comparison, the Giants haven't necessarily gotten good value with their picks. So if you can shore that up, then it doesn't matter whether you pick 15th, you pick 17th, you pick 9th.
At Toby Gleish, we should start thinking about Eli's replacement despite bad protection. This is the NFL. He can't perform while being rushed. Well, you already drafted a quarterback in the fourth round last year in Ryan Nassib. You're not drafting another quarterback this year. It's just not happening.
First of all, a lot of Giants fans were complaining that they kept three quarterbacks. How many quarterbacks do you want to keep next season?
Maybe they could put Nassib in like punt protector or something. NYG Cap Central, as usual, the earliest the Giants could, and he uses the word divest themselves, very well done, of Will Beatty is the 2015 offseason as a June 1st cut. Remember, you don't have to wait till June 1st anymore to actually cut the guy. You can designate them a June 1st cut. And what that does, it spreads the salary cap hit over two seasons. So I guess that, based on how his contract is structured, that's the only way you can do it without having, you know, tens of millions of dollars of dead money, which is something you obviously want to avoid.
But you're going to get the hit regardless of how you look at it.
Right, but yeah, it's not as bad as the longer you wait. At Mr. Felton 23, Jimmy Graham's a free agent next year. I'm just saying, I get that, but Jimmy Graham don't block. To say it quite plainly, Jimmy Graham don't block.
Well, the other thing is Jimmy Graham's going to cost you a big portion of your salary cap, too.
Big. My God. Jimmy Graham And I forget what tight end tried to do this when they got franchised. Boy, I can't remember. Jimmy Graham, when he comes up as a free agent, he's going to say, I deserve to be paid on the pay scale of a wide receiver, not a tight end.
You're talking about JerMichael Finley.
JerMichael Finley did that. I was trying to remember who did it.
Correct. He made that case.
And that's the same exact case Jimmy Graham's going to make. Do you know why? He never lines at the line of scrimmage. He's always split out wide. And like I said, Jimmy Graham, don't block.
And he also puts up numbers that are, in comparison, maybe even better than your average wide receiver. So it's understandable that he would make that case more so than JerMichael Finley. But remember, Giants fans, you need to understand this. You look at your needs in the offseason. If you had one need, which was tight end, then I would say, hey, the Giants should take their fair share of chances blowing away Jimmy Graham with an offer. But you don't just need to patch up tight end. You need to patch up all types of positions on offense, few positions on defense. You can't afford to lock up that type of money in one guy.
See, at NFL, Jintz is trying to cause trouble now. He knows what he's doing here.
Spicing it up here this morning. Oh, I saw the tweet.
He's trying to mix it up a little bit. Should the Giants sign Richie Incognito, he's a free agent.
They would never consider him.
No. You don't want that distraction. Now, I will say this. In terms of his style as an on-the-field player, as a physical, mauling, blue-collar type of offensive guard, is that the type of player that the Giants should look at bringing in? Yes. Should they bring in the guy that has not been suspended for his team for saying racially insensitive remarks and potentially bullying somebody? Yes, they will avoid somebody like that. I can say that with much certainty.
You want Richie Incognito style on the field without the baggage off the field.
Richie minus the baggage. At NFL NYG 43, our man Vic Fontana. Beatty, Booth, Pew, Stay, Bosny, Brewer, Go. Brewer is horrible. Spend all the money there. By the way, find the healthy running back. I think the interior of the offensive line is where the Giants are going to address most of their needs. I think they'll stick with my guess, and I know fans aren't going to like this. I believe Pew. I tried to combine Beatty and Pew yes. into one entity there. I believe Pew and Beatty will be back as the bookends of the offensive line next year.
If Beatty had a little Pew in him this season, perhaps that would do wonders for the offensive line.
But that's about it on Twitter. You guys doing good work as always. We'll go back to our phones at 201-939-4513. Let's go to Ernest in Connecticut. Ernest likes to call into our Big Blue Hits video show. Now he joins us on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Ernest, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Doing well, Ernest. What's on your mind?
Okay, I'm liking your show. Well, first, I have a couple of comments, but I have a couple of questions if you can ask. But I'd like to hear the answer.
Sure.
I just want to hear the answer. Thing I want to say is I was hearing you're saying something about Cruz or either Andre Brown being the MVP of the offense. I don't see how that could even be a question that Victor Cruz is the MVP of the offense. He's been consistent the whole year. He's been the only person that has been consistent. Andre Brown has come, you know, he came back and played those few games. I don't even know how Victor Cruz could be disrespected like that. This man has been on fire for the whole. If it wasn't for Victor Cruz, from the beginning of the year to almost now, we would have had no offense.
No, I think that's fair. And that's why Victor Cruz, to me, Ernest, was my offensive MVP this year. I agree with you.
Yeah, and on defense, I do agree with you with Andrell Roll. He's been on fire, so I have to give it to him. But there's something I wanted to say about Eli. I'm very tough on Eli because I believe that he deserves it. When I watch Eli Manning Sunday, I noticed that he does a lot of pointing. He does a whole lot of different things at the line.
Yeah.
I think that if Eli Manning would just get on the line, make his one guard, stop trying to be like his brother and pointing over here and pointing over here, get his mind focused on what he has to do. Make the one read, you know, the make that one read or whatever he needs to do, he would have more time to set up. They wouldn't ride the clock. The clock wouldn't run down so quick on him. So I think that what he needs to do is make his mind up, make his decision, get under the, center, and make his play.
Yeah, Ernest, I don't think Eli Manning does anything much different than every other quarterback in the league, whether it's Romo or Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady or Drew Brees. All these guys are making changes to the line. It's not just Eli Manning.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Somebody called me. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's all right, Ernest. Thanks for the call, bud.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good one. Thanks for calling in. I think they need to get the play in quicker. Half the time, the Giants aren't breaking the huddle until there's 14, 15 seconds on the play clock. That's the bigger issue to me than Eli trying to make changes to the line of scrimmage. That's one of his strengths, in my opinion, as a quarterback, if not his greatest strength, is his ability to read the defense and put the Giants in the best position they can to have successful plays.
He's had a track record of doing that since he arrived in this league. And how many delay of game penalties have they had, John? They had another one, by the way, in this last game. They have perfected that penalty.
There are few things that rile Giant fans more, I think, than those delay game penalties. And I don't blame them. They're frustrating because they're needless.
Can easily be avoided. There's no reason that a veteran offense, and it's not a bunch of rookies out there.
Right.
And the other thing that Ernest had mentioned, we are always giving Victor Cruz a lot of credit. But question that we were posing this week, remember, and we even brought this up on Big Blue Hits on Friday, where would the Giants offense be if Victor Cruz wasn't in the mix? You know, Jernigan and other guys stepped up this week. That doesn't mean that you would have had the consistency across the board, but there are other players that I think would have been productive if given more reps this season, not necessarily to the degree, though, of a Victor Cruz.
I'll buy that. 201-939-4513. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Let's start off with Steve in D.C. He called in first. Steve-o, good morning. You had a happy Sunday.
Happening? Happy holidays, guys. Happy
you too.
Holidays. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Listen, I'm going to have a couple comments real quick, and then I have a big question, so hopefully y'all can answer my question for me. I just want to say this. You know, all year I've been, for the last 2 years, I mean, it's the same thing with Eli. You know, even when he had time, you know, he's still throwing off his back foot. His decision-making was more than questionable, and it's just troubling to see a veteran, you know, who knows better, make decisions really what I think is based on what pretty much, you know, fear of what happened the last play. So I don't know how we'll get past that because we know this guy has the talent. But, you know, like I've been saying, you know, and just like the last call said, we're doing too much at the line. I think it's really affecting our offensive line play. I think we will see a better BD next year.
No, but Steve, hold on 1 second real quick. One of the things Eli's doing at the offensive line is setting up his protections to give the offensive line the best chance they have to block somebody.
Well, I just think he's making a play call. Maybe we need to rein him in a little bit. You know, this is my opinion. I think we need to rein him in a little bit.
Okay.
You know, I mean, you know, we do have a lot of delayed game calls, but, I mean, the thing is this. I mean, he's making poor decisions all over the field. I mean, he went long yesterday, like the third quarter, when Brandon Myers was wide open. He went for the long ball. He's just, you know, listen, I don't think we're ever going to agree on that, guys, but I just really feel like, you know, I'm not one of those people who's going to say we need to get rid of him, but we certainly need to, you know, play towards our strengths a little bit, and we need to rein it in a little bit on the offense. I think the MVP of the offense is the defense. So I'll just leave that alone. You know, as far as talking about the defense, you know, I think my MVP, you know, I'm a Florida guy. So I think Will Hill has made the biggest impact. Obviously, Anton Rhodes, the MVP, he has, what, 6-7 picks? You know, but I think who's made the biggest impact, I know everybody's high on Beeson, but yesterday, Will Hill, I mean, he's just class act. I mean, did you see this guy tackling? I mean, come on. This guy has been, you know, on top of every play, you know, out there. So I don't think he's let down one single bit. Beeson, great player. You know, the only thing that concerns me about Beeson is obviously his health, but he's just not that good in coverage. And I mean, part of it is his height. He'll never have interceptions just because of his height alone. So we definitely need to address that. You know, Jaquan Williams and Keith Rivers, honestly, you know, I think we need to replace both of those guys. So, guys, one more comment and then a bigger question. So my comment is this. First of all, I think we needed a strength coach. These guys just don't even look strong out there. They just don't.
What do you mean? Who are you talking about?
Constant injuries. I mean, I just, you know, we're not, you know, we just don't seem intimidating at all on any aspect of the game. I mean, other than our DBs, our safeties. Those are the only ones who look like they impose their will on anybody.
John Beeson doesn't look strong to you?
Well, yeah, I'll give you Beeson.
Justin Tuck doesn't look strong to you this year. Cohen Jenkins, Jonathan Hankins. I mean, their run defense has been, they've won the battle of the line of scrimmage all game.
I'll give you the tackles, but I'm going to tell you right now, and I'm happy with the way Justin Tuck played this year, but I'm worried. I'm worried we're going to give him too much money. It's a contract year. Where was he the last 2 years prior to that? I'm really worried about that, guys. I've been really worried about that. I want to see the guy stay. I think he's, you know, he's a great player. I want to see him retire as a Giant, but I don't want to pay him off what he did this year, because we had 2 years prior to this where he didn't do anything. So I'm gonna leave it with this one last question, because this is, to me, this is the tale of the tape. I have never seen a veteran like Eli have such a poor decision, you know, year for the last couple of years. And my biggest question is, you guys, you know, oh, God. I'm sorry, I thought I was another car.
Nah, no worries. What do you got, Steve? Real quick, finish up.
How many interceptions has Eli thrown on second down? That, to me, is the tale of the tape. How many on second down? It's got to be a record.
I'd have to look. I don't know.
Kevin Gilbride. That's ridiculous to have that many interceptions on second down. So, hey, that's all I got for today, guys. You guys have a merry, merry Christmas, and I'm sure I'll be in touch with you guys soon.
Thanks, Steve. Merry Christmas, buddy. And I don't. To me, does it really matter when Eli throws his picks, whether it's first down, second down, or third down? Doesn't make a difference to me. A turnover is a turnover, right?
I agree. I mean, that's just being nitpicky.
I mean, I think part of maybe that is that you haven't run the ball consistently, so you're in second and long a lot, third and long a lot, and then you have to try to make a play. Then whether it's a sack, a pass pressure, you know, guys blitz, you throw into the coverage, wide receiver's not making plays, bad things happen.
If Steve is right and he has thrown a lot of interceptions on second down, and we have to look back at the archives and everything, then that means, you know, you're running the ball on first down, you're not getting any penetration, and therefore you're deciding to air it out, which probably has happened more often than not this season.
I think a better test, and maybe we can go back and look at this, Lance, at some point when we get to the offseason here next week, is take a look at when Eli Manning's interceptions came in terms of score of the game, whether they were trailing or leading or tied. Also, down and distance, more important distance than down. How many was it second and third and long because the Giants' running game couldn't do anything on first down? I think those are two of the more important things that you can look at to really determine what some of the issues were behind some of those picks.
I think you're going to see it across the board, because remember the Denver game. He throws some late interceptions. They were just throwing bombs down the field just to see if they could get back in the game. So every interception, as Eli Manning said, has its own story. I mean, that wasn't a bunch of BS. There is some truth behind that, but you'd have to look back at the numbers a little bit more carefully to see if indeed there are some trends.
And by the way, I don't want to get ahead of myself too much here for a second, but Mike Becknew does this every year, one of our good editors and camera guys over there. I was talking with him, and we're having a discussion about the Giants' opponents next year. Boy, they're playing two of the up-and-coming divisions, in my opinion, in the league next year. It's a problem, and it's not going to get any easier. They have to play the NFC West, which has four of the best defenses in football, including defensive lines that get after the quarterback. They get the Niners, the Seahawks, the Rams, and the Cardinals.
Cardinals' defense very good this year.
All four of them are very good. That's a problem. And then I think next year the AFC South is going to have a big bounce back year. I think the Colts will get better one more year. I think the Texans, if they figure out their quarterback situation, will certainly be a lot better next year than they were this season. And don't laugh, but look, the Jaguars haven't been a bad football team the second half of this year, and Tennessee is pretty solid. Well, so those are eight games besides the NFC East that are not going to be easy games next year.
And I don't think it's necessarily a laugher in terms of Jacksonville. You figure Jacksonville's going to probably invest in a quarterback potentially this offseason if they choose not to go to the draft. Gus Bradley's a very good defensive-minded guy. He's probably going to beef up the defense now that he'll have another full offseason. And the Titans, remember, Jake Locker's going to come back. And they were very good when Locker was under center.
And I'll tell you what, they've developed a nice little receiving core over there. Kendall Wright's been good this year. Delanie Walker's been consistent at tight end. Nate Washington's been pretty good at wide receiver. Chris Johnson, though, we'll see salary cap-wise. This might be the year they let Chris Johnson go. I think they can survive a cap hit based on his contract, and their defense has been pretty decent. So those are eight opponents, and then we'll see. I guess the Giants have now clinched the third spot in the NFC East, so then they would play the third-place team in the NFC North. So I guess that would be the Detroit Lions, right? Or could they still finish ahead of Green Bay if the Bears beat Green Bay next week?
Well, the most losses the Packers could have is eight. So then they potentially would go to 7-8-1.
And
the Lions
could be 8-8 next week if they win.
Could be 8-8, so therefore the Lions would move ahead of the Packers.
So theoretically, the Giants are either going to play Green Bay or Detroit next year.
You're probably going to see Aaron Rodgers.
And then in the NFC South, they're probably going to get the
Atlanta or Tampa Bay.
What's their record
situation? Well, Atlanta's 4-10, Tampa Bay's 4-11. Atlanta plays tonight, remember. So
depending
Atlanta
on what happens next week, they'll get either the Falcons or the Bucks, two teams that I think both of us believe will be a lot better next year than they were this year. Well, it's just based on the fact that Mike Lennon's a year older and the Falcons will retool a little bit.
Well, and the Falcons should get healthier. Julio Jones and Roddy White, you assume, are going to bounce back to full form.
So that's a tough schedule next year again. I don't want to go nuts here about
we're
next
really
year's schedule.
Ahead,
but I just thought it was interesting.
No,
it
is a fair point.
It's going to be tough. I mean, defensively, you got some good defensive teams going to play next year.
When is it not tough, as I always say? You know,
the
there's
NFL's
no any games in the NFL.
And you never know either year to year how good these teams are going to be. So I realize I'm doing a lot of extrapolation here, but still.
Well, one other thing before we get back to the callers, and I know there's a few hanging on the line, I wanted to just piggyback off of one point that Steve brought up. And he mentioned about Justin Tuck's been productive, but he doesn't want the Giants to throw the bank at him. And that got me thinking, especially with what happened to Kobe Bryant recently. No, the reason I bring that up in the conversation, do you pay players for what they did in the past?
You shouldn't.
Or do you pay them for what you think they're going to do in the future? Well, it's a dilemma that I think most teams face.
Well, especially guys that are franchise players. And the Yankees went through a similar thing with Derek Jeter when he came up for his last contract.
Yep.
You know how great he was, but do you really think at age 37, and look, Tuck's not quite that old, but do you think he can repeat that performance in his twilight of his career, for lack of a better term? And that's a good question. That's why, I mean, they're not going to give Tuck a 4-year, $28 million contract.
Absolutely
here.
Not.
You know, you offer him 3 years, I don't know, 8 to 12, somewhere in that area. Maybe the last couple years have some incentives that are easily voidable based on
maybe a
performance,
deal,
things like that.
And
yeah.
Then third year is an option of
some
sort.
I mean, I don't
sort.
Think he's going to get a big long-term contract from anybody else.
It's not as if he's a rookie.
You pay him. Look, I'm not saying you lowball the guy, but you don't break the bank either. You pay him what his market value is. I think that'll come in at somewhere around 3 a year.
And I think Tuck's the type of player that wants to finish his career out with the
no
Giants.
Question
so there's going to be
it.
Some understanding between both parties where I don't think Tuck's going to say, if you don't give me this, I'm leaving town, goodbye, I'm not going to take this anymore. I think there's a number of veterans here that are probably going to be willing to make some sacrifices from a financial perspective because they think that they can bounce back, they can win here, but in order to win, they need to give the team some flexibility to bring in some other players. So those conversations are going to happen over the course of the offseason. But I would agree with you, John. You have to pay guys based on what you think is going to happen moving forward. And that means you take into consideration their age and you take into consideration their injury history. And a lot of the guys that we've thrown out are not youngsters. So therefore, you're not paying them what they've done 2 or 3 years back.
Pierre in Dallas at 201-939-4513. Pierre, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Hey, John and Lance, you guys are much better than Paul Pitino and the other, what's her name?
Anita Marks, Pierre. We appreciate the compliment, but everyone does a great job, and they do a good job on Wednesdays and Thursdays. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling.
Yeah. Listen, I just want to say that I think that you guys, I like you guys.
I appreciate
I'm a
that, Pierre.
I'm a Cowboys fan. I want to say this: we as Cowboys fans respect the Giants. We feel like, I know that the Giants will retool next year. They'll be a competitive team next year. The NFC East will not be the least next year. All the teams will probably be competitive next year. And I just want to tell the Giants fans, hey, we respect you guys. Hope you guys give us respect. But you guys will be better next year.
Well, Pierre, hold on 1 second. I want to get a feel for what's going on in Big D here because you guys survived the big game against Washington now, and you got a big game next week, home against Philadelphia. Finally, the Cowboys get to play at home in one of these season-deciding games. How confident do you think the fan base is here taking on the Eagles coming off a 54-point offensive explosion against the Bears? Are the Cowboys fans feeling good about themselves, or are they expecting disaster?
Hey man, I don't even want to jinx my team, and I don't even want to speak on it, man. But I will say this: any given Sunday, any team can beat any team, man. Seahawks just proved that last night.
True.
I just want to say that, you know, Eli's having a time that Romo's had all pretty much his whole career, man. He hadn't had an offensive line. Romo's really the reason why we've even had the opportunity to be in these games at the end of the year, at the last 3 years. If we had players, as many players like Romo on the team, we might have would have done something. But Eli's he'll bounce back next year. He'll bounce back. He's just having a tough go at it. Next year it'll be a whole different year for the Giants, and you know, hopefully it'll be the Cowboys and Giants going at it again.
All right, Pierre. Thanks for the call, pal. Look at this. We're getting fans from other fan bases now. How about that? Maybe Pierre heard some of my hits with Mickey Spagnuolo, our boys down there on Cowboys.com.
Well, we've had Mickey on our show multiple times,
Job.
Too. little give and take between the Cowboys and Giants organizations.
And not hate either, a little respect.
I know.
We like that.
And a lot of Giants fans I know in the past, because we've had some fans from other teams, whether it be Redskins or a Cowboys fan, and then you get hit up on Twitter, oh, what is a Cowboys or Redskins fan listening or calling in? But, you know, that was definitely some respect being thrown out the way to Giants Nation.
Should we be a little afraid that we haven't heard from Ann in D.C.? Do you think she's doing okay?
It's funny you brought that up, because I was talking to Ash before the show.
Our call screener.
Correct. And we were going back and forth as to why Ann has not called in recently. And I would think that it was a golden opportunity for her to call in because the Giants have struggled. And they had been losing again after that winning streak. So the fact that all of a sudden she's in hiding and she doesn't want to show her true colors, I'm a little disappointed. And I know a lot of people on Twitter don't want to hear from her. But once in a while, it would be nice to get her side of things.
Well, I want to try to relate this back to what's going on in Washington, D.C. now. As you well know, the IRS actually has a very large role in implementing part of the Affordable Care Act. So maybe she's so busy at work trying to help.
Well, you were waiting to use that line.
I really was. Helping get the ACA off the ground that she hasn't had time to call it. And maybe her supervisor finally figured out that, you know what, I hear you're screaming, and it's not her usual ranting about something else. She's yelling on the phone, and we need to shut down these work-related phone calls.
I guess you've given up on the Knicks blog. It's now a political blog all of a sudden.
I'm just saying, in the fictitious life that we've built for Ann in D.C., I feel like that could be an issue at this time of year.
Anything's possible. Listen, I mean, we don't really need to psychoanalyze that woman, I'll tell you that. But remember, when she does call up, and I just want to make this very clear to our listeners, our corporate mouthpieces will be right next to us, and we'll make sure that we can easily put them back in.
By the way, we told Pat Hanlon that we referred to as corporate mouthpieces, and his response, you guys have finally learned how to do your job right.
Why am I not surprised that that would be his response?
It's very funny. Final call of the show at 201-939-4513 is Lawrence down in sunny Florida. Lawrence, I wish we were having weather up here like you're having down there.
Well, thanks for having me. I just want to say the Giants, you know, I've always been optimistic over the years, but now I'm all shook up. I think it's time for decimation.
Oh,
remember, Crassus did it against Spartacus. Caesar threatened his guys with it. And remember Bill Parcells in 90 got rid of Lionel Manuel for falling asleep at the meeting. And in this case, the offensive lineman, that James Brewer, that guy's got to go. That guy, he's terrible. And in the as far as the tight ends, that the tight end they have now, that Brandon Myers.
Yeah.
Every time he catches the ball, he falls down. I don't know if he's got a bad case of hammer toe, he's got vertigo or something. He might be a Thomas Lewis. This guy from the 90s, he was the number one draft pick. Every time he caught the ball, he fell down. And then remember the beginning of the year when he caught the ball in the 30, he ran to the 25, he fell down.
Correct.
And when he catches a touchdown, he rolls into the end zone. He came and run. And yes, it was a miracle. He ran. I couldn't even believe it. I mean, they had Kevin Boss. He was a rookie. He did well. Jake Ballard, free agent, did well. Marcellus Bennett, you didn't know. But when he got here, he did well. This guy was supposed to be good from the beginning. You know, he caught 39 passes. And then yesterday when he was the final straw was yesterday on that sack. He was supposed to be blocking. He stuck his elbow out. It looked like he was doing the chicken dance. Stuck his elbow out, and the guy just ran right by him and sacked Eli for the safety.
Well, he's never been strong in pass protection. That goes without saying, Lawrence. I don't think that's anything new. We didn't necessarily learn about that the other game. And you threw out some of the previous tight ends, but keep in mind, in an ideal world, they would have loved to keep Martellus Bennett. But he got $5 million a year from the Chicago Bears. And the Giants did not have the financial flexibility to throw that type of an offer his way.
Well, the point was that the other tight ends came in and did well with Eli, and you need that tight end. This guy was supposed to be good from the beginning. He caught 79 passes. This guy's good. Wait till he goes with Eli. He's going to do so good. I mean, this guy is...
Well, but Lawrence...
I'm all shook up about this.
And Lawrence, I don't mean to cut you off, but here's the difference. And we talked about this earlier in the season. You're referring to guys like Jake Ballard and Kevin Boss, but the two of them had the luxury of playing alongside a very strong offensive line. Brandon Myers is now being asked to do even more to make up for the issues that are on the O-line. So before we put so much stock in guys like Ballard and guys like Boss, just keep in mind the personnel that they had next to them, whereas Brandon Myers has played with a completely different O-line, which has been plagued by injuries more so than what all of those other tight ends have had to deal with.
I guess, but I mean, I don't know. It's just that you need Eli needs that tight end in there to help him out, and he's just not getting it. I think that's him and the you know, everyone knows the offensive line, but that tight end throwing there, too, is a big problem the whole season.
Thanks for the call, Lawrence. We appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
Have a Merry Christmas. Have a happy holidays. We appreciate it. And by the way, if you look at Myers' overall stats, they're really not that bad. He's going to fit. He has, right now, he has 45 catches for 513 yards and 4 touchdowns. Before the season, we figured he would have it around between 55 and 60. So he'll come up a little bit short of that, but nothing that bad.
He's picked up in the last few games.
Sure,
I mean, he was on a streak where he scored those touchdowns. And Lawrence was even referring to that Cowboys touchdown where the Dallas defense decided that they didn't want to even touch Brandon Myers, so he was able to get back up and roll into the end zone. That was basically a gift that the Dallas defense gave him. But still, you're right. I think Myers has improved from an offensive standpoint, at least being a receiving threat. They did anticipate getting more out of him, but you know, the other part of this is, you know, think about the receiving core around Brandon Myers, the offensive line. I think that's a big reason why Myers didn't necessarily pan out as quickly as people anticipated.
No question about it. And by the way, NYG Cap Central put up the Giants' opponents for next year, and we were right on everything. Just to get more specific on in terms of where they're traveling and who's traveling here, the Giants will be going to Arizona. They will be hosting Arizona, hosting San Francisco, hosting Houston, and hosting Indianapolis. So I think it's probably a good thing you're not going to Indy or to Houston, two very difficult games.
But that means you're going to Seattle, though, am I right?
Road games, you're going to St. Louis, you're going to Seattle, you're going to Jacksonville, my favorite NFL city.
Awesome. Oh, I'm so happy about that.
And at Tennessee, which actually is, Nashville is one of my favorite NFL cities. Nashville is a fun town. Nashville is a good time. Put on those cowboy boots, have a little hoedown.
You should be disappointed, actually, that you're not going out to San Francisco because you get to visit the new stadium.
I know.
And you were complaining about the press box.
Well, the old stadium was subpar.
Does not meet the high demands of John Schmo.
Well, it doesn't meet the high demands of a 21st century radio broadcast. I don't care about my standards. I want more than one plug in my radio booth, all right?
Hey, that's asking for too much. How about the Lions facility? What was that like?
Oh, beautiful.
Beautiful?
Love the Lions. It reminds me a lot of...
Motown some love.
The Ford Field is very similar to the Indianapolis Stadium. Reliant? No.
Lucas Oil.
Lucas Oil, I'm sorry.
We got to get the sponsors.
Very
right
similar.
Here.
We do. But very, very, very similar to Lucas Oil Field in terms of how it's built. They're kind of both like field houses. Very good facilities. All the new stadiums have good facilities. They all do. And some of the older ones. And now San Francisco is going to get their new one. And it should be good.
When they built MetLife Stadium, did they ask you how many outlets they should have in the Giants press box?
They asked me a lot, actually, to be quite honest with you.
Well, that's I'm interested.
Clearly, the
fan base is dying to hear about
this,
They
asked for a recommendation. Me and Chris Majakowski, who is our engineer and also is the engineer for the Mets. He is immortal, according to Gary Cohen, if you've listened to the Mets radio broadcast in years past. We set it up, and people were just in the other day taking a tour of our facilities, getting ready for the Super Bowl. I showed some people around, and their quote, "This is some of the best locker room setups we have in the entire NFL."
And
so I will take full credit for
did
that.
Not hesitate patting yourself
no, I
on
did
the
not.
Back. See, that, I just wanted to make sure. I'm very glad to hear this.
Speaking of patting myself on the back, a perfect segue. Did you check the fantasy football Super Bowl final score, Lance Meadow?
You know, I did see, and you have the Niners defense tonight.
I do.
By the chinny chin chin.
Well,
didn't have the Niners defense.
I have a 3-point lead with the Niners defense pending.
Pierre Garçon did some heavy lifting for you.
Thank goodness for that. And Dallas Cowboys defense, baby.
And we should actually, because you threw out the question to our fan base on Friday. You went with Cam Newton, clearly, because we were debating Kirk Cousins. And the numbers were, I think, equivalent. Did actually Kirk Cousins put up, one additional point?
I believe that's correct. And the funny thing is Russell Wilson was also within a point of the other two guys. So I could have went with any of the three, and it would have worked out just fine, which is the funny thing. So all that angst and worrying about stuff for nothing. And it's funny, both my running backs, Adrian Peterson and Maurice Jones-Drew, ended up playing, and neither one really did anything. They combined for only like 16 points in the game. But, very, very quiet game all around.
If you don't get the performance out of Pierre Garçon, this is a game where you're relying on that Niners defense.
And Julius Thomas, big performance out of him for me. Got Peyton Manning's record-breaking touchdown and clinched the Super Bowl for Team Schmelk.
Now, this is title number what for you? Is it two?
I haven't won in a long time, though. That's the thing.
The question is, did you ever win? You should have the insignia on top of your page. They
I'm
have
going,
the little titles.
I'm
just
going,
reminding
I'm
you.
Going to
because,
the
see,
roster.
Somebody has hardware atop their page.
See, you just gaze at
okay,
it.
Okay, so you have
and
one
enjoy,
there.
Enjoy, yes.
Like.
All,
right, so
all
is,
the way back in 2002, though.
So, therefore, you will tie yours truly.
Are we the only two-time champions?
I have a feeling that
or
somebody
Brooke,
else may
maybe
have
a two-time
titles.
Champion.
But I just want to make sure that you understand who you're joining in terms of the hardware tally.
Well, here we go. We can actually look at people don't care about this. I'm sorry.
Well,
but
see, you love to get caught up in yourself, so I'm just feeding into this. We could have this conversation off the air, but why? Why deprive the listeners an opportunity to hear about
why
the ins
make
and outs
them suffer
of a meaningless fantasy football
us.
League?
Right, exactly.
And I did tally the picks, but we're going to wait because the Niners-Falcons game. We picked every game.
I don't believe
oh,
I
oh, you did not do too
fair,
well. But that's why I want to save it. Well, actually, no, we're not going to have a show tomorrow.
How
so
bad
we save
was
it
I? How
I
bad
think you
was
had
I?
The lowest total of wins, but I got to bring it up.
I know.
Let's
I
take a
did
look.
Not do well. I was looking at that yesterday.
The bad part is
the
I
only,
think Tino had the most wins.
The only thing that softened the blow was the was my fantasy Super Bowl championship, but it was
oh boy,
it
you're
was gonna
rough. Be riding high into the off season with that. I'm never gonna hear the end of that.
Oh boy, it was bad
until I draft my team. Let's see, you had a total of
by the way, there have been
five wins,
3 2-time champions. By the way, me, you, and Matt Brown.
Okay, very nice.
Anyway,
so three people.
Matt right. Brown writes for the AP out in Chicago.
Correct.
Anyway, so five and what was that? Five and like eight.
Well, you have the
five
Niners
and
tonight.
Five and nine, I guess it was.
I think there were what? There were 15 games
oh,
so far?
That is bad. Yeah, that is 15 games so far.
Oh, wow, Tino has the most wins, I think, so far.
Oh, did he pass Salomon in the standings, or is it close? Yeah, he might have.
Yeah, Salomon did not have too
you know
many
what?
Wins. I was second.
You know what? I went against both NFC East teams. Those ended up being losses. Yeah, that was that's a bad week. What could I tell you? And then I thought the Dolphins were a shoo-in pick. I was wrong about that.
That was a bad performance by Miami.
Well, how about getting – you let the Bills pitch a shutout against you, and you need that win to get into the playoffs, and the Ravens lose later in the day? That's a terrible loss.
That's what happens when your offensive line is not good. Miami's offensive line has not been good the entire season.
Boy.
You can relate it to the Giants. Tannehill gets sacked 7 times. But there's been games where he's gotten good protection, and he's thrived, and he's thrown for 3 touchdowns. So you need to put that in perspective. It starts with the O-line. It's not just necessarily the Giants' issue. It's across the board. Ravens, too, with Joe Flacco. Can't protect your quarterback. You're going to have an up-and-down season from an offensive perspective. But you're right. Things have drastically changed in terms of the playoff picture. You know, Seattle had an opportunity to even wrap up that division. That's still in play. Arizona getting a good win. And the Saints could very well miss out on the playoffs, by the way. Arizona wins next week. The Saints lose. The Cardinals get a wild card.
Who do the Saints have next week?
I think the Saints have Atlanta, if I'm
correct. Well, so much for that.
I may be wrong.
Is that in Atlanta or
that.
In New Orleans? Well, they're playing either the Bucks.
Right,
they're playing either the Bucks or the Falcons.
You know what? I take
Bucks
that back.
The,
I think Carolina has Atlanta.
Atlanta. So then they're playing
Let's
the Bucs.
Take a look.
The
Saints have the Bucs.
Are
yes.
they in Tampa or at home?
They're home. They're in New Orleans.
Wow.
Good chance that the Saints win that game.
Yeah. And the Saints have not played well at the end of this year.
What a season for Arizona, though.
And now the Saints will have to, in the playoffs, rather than having a first-round bye, they will have to travel probably, they will be the last wild card after San Francisco, right? So the Saints will probably have to go to the third-best division winner, which might actually be either Dallas or Philadelphia. Because they're probably going to finish with a better record than the NFC North, correct?
Well, the Philadelphia Eagles have the edge right now. But if the Cowboys were to win, potentially, the Cowboys and the Bears have identical records.
What are they both, 8-6?
And Chicago, though, gets the tiebreaker based on the head-to-head matchup.
Against Dallas.
Correct. But Chicago loses
right.
the head-to-head against Philadelphia because of what happened Sunday night. So it depends on who wins the NFC East.
And who wins the NFC North.
Correct. Yeah.
There you go. So that's still very
that's
much up in the
and down
air.
In terms
right.
of the 3 and 4 seed.
Right. A couple other things on Twitter. Vic and Dave in Rochester both believe that Ann Husband has had enough, and that's why we haven't heard enough from her. We'll leave it at that. And then Mike Farmer, how does everyone feel about Josh Brown? I'm on the fence leaning towards wanting him back next year, and other people really think they like Josh Brown. I think Josh Brown's been very good. He was a little inconsistent early in the year, but his kickoffs have been excellent. I think he's been a pretty good field goal kicker. He's a good locker room guy. I like Josh Brown. I bring him back. He likes kicking in inclement weather. I think that's very important for a field goal kicker, especially here in New York. I would bring Josh Brown back. Josh Brown back.
And
no question.
During our post-game show on the radio yesterday, he was interviewed in the locker room, and he even mentioned, you know, it took some time between him and Steve Weatherford to get on the same page.
That always happens, though, with the whole
thing. Which is understandable. You work with a new punter. I think Josh Brown has earned a right to come back. I mean, it depends on how much money he's asking for.
I think he knows better. He's a guy that's traveled around and has already probably made the mistake of going from team to team when he shouldn't have left. You know, Lawrence Tynes, I'm sure, regrets, you know, leaving the Giants last year. He could have stuck around if he was going to be reasonable with his contract demands.
How long was he on the market?
And now he goes to Tampa, and obviously the terrible thing with the MRSA. I mean, I don't know if he's still on his IV drip or whatever he had to try to fight that thing, but, you know, there's a lawsuit pending with the league, and there's nothing good about what happened to Lawrence Tynes down there. But God bless him, and best wishes, because that's a bad spot.
The bottom line is you want to build stability, especially at positions that have to deal with special teams. How much jockeying do you want to do year in, year out? That's why when I look at the tight end spot, I know a lot of people are not happy with Brandon Myers, but do you want to go five straight seasons with five different tight ends? I mean, do you really want to go in that direction? Same thing with the kicker. Three straight seasons with a different kicker?
I'll bring back Myers if I can't find somebody I think is a long-term solution, but I want my long-term solution in the draft this year.
But you can have Myers and then have the young guy on the roster. You can have both.
And I'll see who's available. And is Jermaine Gresham a free agent this year?
I'd have to look that
up. Because they have Eifert up there. They probably won't re-sign Gresham if Gresham's a free agent. You'd probably have to pay him a little bit, but he's one of those good two-way tight ends that I'd be willing to give some money to. Eagles, likewise, could let Brent Celek go. He's not much of a blocker, though, either. You know, they got Zach Ertz down there. I know they like to go double tight ends and everything in Chip Kelly's system, but that's something else you could look at.
Let's take a look at the free agent tight ends.
And that's about it on Twitter. We'll wrap it up after Lance
Gresham
gets his
free
agent.
Gresham is not
on
the list.
He's not?
No, okay. He's not on the list. And then who was the other guy that you threw out from the Eagles?
Celek?
Celek is not listed as a free agent either.
Anybody notable? I know you and Fiegels are looking at this on the pregame show. Fred Davis, I think, is someone they could look at if they think mentally he's a guy that could be okay.
Something you got to wait to.
Ed Dixon's a good blocking tight end who's a free agent from the Ravens. Jermichael Finley, obviously, his injury history, who knows. We talked about Jimmy Graham, makes way too much money. Dustin Keller, again, more of a receiver, not much of a blocker.
Coming back from a torn ACL, keep
that
in mind,
too.
Greg Olsen may not be a bad option.
You know what? Greg Olsen is a guy they could look at. He's a decent blocker, not great, but he's at least has the size to do it, and he's a pretty good physical receiver, got some height over the middle. I think that's probably your best option looking at this list. I think Greg Olsen's the guy, but frankly, the Panthers will probably want to bring him back. Him and Cam Newton have pretty good rapport together.
Yeah.
And, again, that's a lot of money. The Giants have a lot of issues elsewhere. I'm not sure if they can spend big on a tight end.
Well, the other guys that I would throw out there in consideration would probably be, let's see who's on this list, Dennis Pitta, Baltimore Ravens. Not necessarily known as a great blocker, too. How about this one? Scott Chandler, one of the tallest tight ends in the NFL. Guy's about 6'7".
And he could block.
From the Buffalo Bills.
He could block a little bit.
That may not be a bad option.
He'd be a low-cost guy to maybe compliment a guy you pick in the early rounds of the draft.
Almost like an additional offensive lineman at times. That may be a good fit for the Giants.
It's not bad. I like that one.
And in terms of running backs, real quickly, because I was looking over the free agents, LeGarrette Blount's going to be on the market.
Dude, ball control issues, fumbles. Tom won't deal with that.
The other one, what about Donald Brown from the Colts? He's not necessarily your power back, but he can be your complimentary back.
Maybe. I mean, you're David Wilson, though. I guess it depends how he recovers from that injury.
I'm telling you, those are the two most notable running backs on the market.
Really shallow,
honestly, I looked over the
market,
list.
Huh?
It is not impressive. It really isn't. There's not a great deal of depth at running back this season. Though you do have your boy, Joik Bell, but keep in mind he's a restricted free agent.
Yeah, they're going to bring him back.
It's not a very impressive list.
Anthony Dixon, he's a decent little running back. Toby Gerhart. You know, Gerhart actually is a good receiver and a good pass protector out of the backfield. He could be a decent complimentary back.
And he now probably wants a starting job.
Brian Leonard, same type of guy. Darren McFadden, does he get you excited?
I'm going to pass on that. You know my feelings about Darren McFadden.
He has ruined many a fantasy football season for
indeed,
you, hasn't
he? Indeed, but it goes way beyond that.
I know, it does. Rashard Mendenhall, Knowshon Moreno is a guy that's out there. He's a good veteran back. Moreno actually would not be a bad fit for this team. I know he has some injury issues in the past, but veteran back could do a little bit of everything.
And Moreno actually, the reason why he got more reps this season was because he was the best pass protector out of the group. But that doesn't say a whole lot because they have a young nucleus of running
backs.
Well,
Hillman couldn't hold on to the football.
And Monte Ball is a rookie.
Monte Ball is a rookie, exactly. But maybe they're ready to give the job to Monte Ball next year if he matures for a season.
biggest issue with him is they were not impressed with how he pass protected. I remember this offseason.
Most rookies don't, though, in the first
year.
True,
but it depends on what he did during the course of the season.
Jordan Todman's actually proven to be a pretty good backup for Maurice Jones-Drew.
That is the John Schmuck fantasy guru talking.
He had it.
What'd you do? You picked him up last week, and all of a sudden he wins you a fantasy game, and you think he's a good fit for the New York Giants.
Lance, thanks for joining us this morning. We appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Merry Christmas and a happy holiday to all.
Yes, we will not be on tomorrow morning or Wednesday morning. We thank everybody for joining us. Have a fantastic holiday season. Enjoy it with your friends and your family. Forget about football for a little bit. Just enjoy the little things and enjoy being with the people you care about the most. Everybody have a great one. Lance, enjoy as well. And we will see you on Friday morning.
Sounds good.
For Big Blue Kickoff Live. And, of course, Paul and Anita will be with you on Thursday morning as well. And then Big Blue hits Thursday and Friday afternoon. No press conference on Wednesday, folks. No press conference wrap-up. And no Big Blue hits on Wednesday. So none of that's going to be going on. Just a heads-up, a programming note for Giants.com. But we will have more content coming your way today and tomorrow. And then on Thursday and Friday as we get ready for the final game at home against the Washington Redskins. Lance, a pleasure. Enjoy your week. We'll see you on Friday. Everybody, great job on the phone. Great job on Twitter. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Have a good one on Giants.com.